This is a presentation by Hillsborough Elam. Building bigger, working together, reaching further.
When I was young, my mum and dad used to tell me to stay away from certain types of people. I don't know if your parents ever did that, but stay away from that group because in their eyes, I was a good boy. Do you know, in their eyes, that was the case, but I was actually one of the ruffians that they were telling me to stay away from, but they didn't know that. But they were warning about staying away from certain people groups and certain types of people on the street corners so that your life would probably go down a better path than the ones who were causing all the trouble. So they used to do that. And Jesus, in the Gospels, from time to time, gives those instructions to his disciples. He warns them about things that they should be careful about and people that they should stay away from and be careful. And the story we're going to look at tonight in Mark's Gospel is one of those stories where Jesus is telling his disciples to stay away or be careful and stay away from this particular group of individuals. So if you go to Mark 12, verses 38, with me, please. And we've about 3 weeks after this on Mark's Gospel to finish it before Christmas, which will be super. So you'll have journeyed the whole way through the Gospel of Mark and hopefully picked out things and similarities and stories and themes that you'll remember. So Mark 12, verse 38, and we'll read down to verse 44. We're going to take these two stories together. So, and in his teaching, he said, that is Jesus, beware of the scribes, who like to walk around in long robes and like greetings in the marketplaces and have the best seats in the synagogues and the places of honor at feasts, who devour widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayers. They will receive the greater condemnation. And he sat down opposite the treasury and watched the people putting money into the offering box. Many rich people put in large sums, and a poor widow put two small copper coins, which make a penny. And he called his disciples to him and said to them, truly, I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the offering box. For they all contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had, all she had to live on. So we continue this theme where Jesus has made his way to Jerusalem and he's bringing a condemnation even to those scribes and religious leaders who are around at that time. Jesus' anger and public displeasure towards these religious leaders continues, and particularly towards the scribes in this story. And he contrasts the behavior of the scribes with this widow, and he goes on to tell the story about this widow and what's going on with her. And she is connected to the story and connected to what Jesus is saying. But were the scribes so bad? What was it about them? Who were they in the first place? Well, scribes were educated individuals. They were around in the ancient Near East before Jesus was there, and they had lots of responsible roles. So they would have been responsible for copying manuscripts. The Old Testament scriptures would have been copied by scribes, but they would have also been responsible for copying all their important literature around at that time. So they were very intelligent. They would have taught the law. They would have taught the Jewish law and would have taught in Jewish literature, so they were very highly educated. They would have worked in the temple and in different temples, in royal courts and in administration. They would have been political advisors, so they would have been given good advice to important people. They would have worked in sciences and ancient methods in science. They would have functioned as sages, so people would have gone to them and said, what do you think about this particular topic or issue? What do you have to say on this? And they would have wrote letters and documents for kings and officials. So they were a very highly educated group of individuals, and they played a pivotal role for better and for worse. In Judaism and in the religion of Judaism, they were integral to all that Judaism was for hundreds of years before Jesus came on the scene and even in the time of Jesus. And they were sometimes valuable and beneficial to the culture and to the religious setting of that day. They played an important part. Even though we hear Jesus in this instance and also in the gospel accounts at other places, we hear of Jesus bringing a challenge to them. They actually played an important part before Jesus came on the scene and when he was there. But they were not all bad. They didn't start out with wrong motives and wrong attitudes. For to be a wise sage and to be somebody who could give important information, they would have had to study the law for years from they were very young. They would have had to invest time and effort into learning the books of the Old Testament off by heart. They would have had to be educated people. It wasn't like one day they just came on the scene and, hey, I'm a scribe. They would have spent their whole lives learning wise sayings, ancient sayings, and they would have been well educated in all sorts of ways. So they were not inherently wicked. The scribes would have spent years in all these things, and they took time to copy the Old Testament. The reason that we have the Old Testament book so well preserved is because of people like scribes who took it upon themselves to copy down what they had, the original documents that they had. So we have to be thankful for them in a lot of ways. They also would have studied culture and history so that they could give wise advice to the ordinary people of those days and understood life. And more importantly, how to live for God. So they had a good motive. They thought they were doing something good. But here Jesus challenges them, because by the time he comes on the scene, their rituals and their ways of doing things have actually become more a distraction than an actual focus. They have lost sight of God. They have lost sight of why they are doing the things that they were doing in the first place. And the honorable position that they hold in society is no longer a means by which they serve. It's actually a means by which they manipulate people to get the best that they can from life. Their rituals that were once the means that which they connected to God actually became their God. So they had used the temple and the synagogue and the learning about the Torah and learning about God's word as a way in which to connect with God. But all those things had actually become their God. And they had forgot about the person. Their worship style, how they worshipped God, actually became their God. Their position that they held in high society to give wise advice to the ordinary people, they had actually abused that role. And they had got other people to serve them when they were there to serve. And they had boasted in God and their relationship with him. But when Jesus comes on the scene, it's no longer boasting in God. It's actually boasting in their achievements and their self-righteousness. This should be a warning to us all. Because what we can do sometimes, our rituals, and ritual isn't a bad word, but our rituals, the ways in which we connect with God, so the way in which we read the Bible, the way in which we worship even in a corporate setting, they're ways in which we connect with God. They are not God. And sometimes we make that mistake. Sometimes we go, we'll have to do it this way. If I don't do it that way, then I'm not doing it. But actually, ritual is the means by which we connect to God, but they are not God in themselves. And our position, if we're a leader in a church or whether we hold a high position in our employment, we're actually put there by God to serve. We're actually there so we can get low, so that we can lift other people up. And sometimes what we do over time, we think, oh, well, I've made it now, so other people are here to serve me. But that's not actually the case, because Jesus shows us a different way. And also our boasting, well, that song we just sang, I will not boast in anything, but we'll only boast in him. And that's okay. But not in ourselves, because we're not righteous on our own. We're only righteous because he has made us righteous. So the scribe should be an example to us. But it's no coincidence that after Jesus gives this warning about the scribes, he points to a widow. And this seems unusual. And what's the connection here? But there is a really stark connection, what Jesus is trying to do. Because you know that in the original manuscripts, in the original scriptures, there were no chapters, there were no verses. It was just wrote in one continuous story. So in this story, he goes on to show the disciples an example of this widow coming in to the temple and giving her offering. And it's no coincidence. And Jesus could hardly have used a more stark contrasting two more different individuals. One is a scribe, one holds high position, well educated, well financed, really comfortable in his life, and the other one is a widow, one of the most overlooked people in all of culture and all of society, and he's contrasting the both of them, and there's a comparison here. Well, what's the connection? Well, he gives certain indictments against the scribes. He says they like to walk around in long robes. Okay, so what they did was the long robe was a sign of status and stature. Look at me, look at my lovely long robe. And it was something that said to the people looking, that those people have made it, those people are high society. They loved greeting in the marketplace. So what would have happened in the marketplace? When a scribe came on the scene, everyone would have been greeting them. And it would have been great to shake hands with a scribe. Because do you know that people who like to name drop, like to throw in, oh, I met such and such the other day, and throw in a famous name, and that sounds great. Well, it would have been the same with the scribes. They would have liked to make a show in the marketplace, and people would have shook their hands and went, aren't you great, and all of those type of things. And they loved that. They loved to take the best seats in the synagogue. So they loved to get into a position where they would have been the ones called upon to say something about the scripture. So if there was a discussion, if they were in the best place, then they would be the first up to say something, and they loved that. They loved the places of honor at the feasts. So rather than take the low position at the end of the table, they wanted to be in the center. They wanted to hold that position so that people would look at them. And the key to how these two stories connect is this phrase. Jesus says they also love to devour widows' houses. That seems to be a bit of a strange phrase, but we'll explain it in just a moment. And then he goes on to say they make, for a pretense, they make long prayers. So they love to pray the eloquent prayers where people go, wow, they've really got it. They've really got a relationship with God because their prayers are just so deep and so authentic. That's what people thought, but actually underneath there was something shallow there and hollow. But what on earth does this mean? They devour widows' houses. Well, it's this. They were manipulating widows, the vulnerable in that society. They were manipulating widows into giving their homes into the temple and into the offering. So they would have went along to the widows and said, look, if you want to be right by God, if you want to be accepted by him and loved by him, then I think you should just give over your land and your property so that we could have that money and then we can do God's work. But actually, they weren't going to do God's work with it. They were just taking it for themselves to line their own pockets. That's what it means. They were taking from the poor and the vulnerable. And I watched a documentary a while ago, and it was about con artists who went around and who went to the vulnerable, people who were elderly and on their own. And these con artists kind of moved in and befriended the elderly and talked to them like they loved them and talked to them like they wanted to help them. But really the motivation was just to try to get them to leave them a big will when no one else was there. And it was absolutely heartbreaking. And I thought, how could anyone ever do that? But some people are just bad to the bone and they will just do things like that. They will take a vulnerable people and abuse their situation and leave them with nothing. And it's absolutely horrible. But in essence, this is what the scribes were doing. The ones who were meant to be representing God were actually doing something so, so horrible and so awful. And Jesus made this statement about being aware of the scribes and the Pharisees as a precursor to what he was going to talk about in just a moment with the widow in the temple, the ones who were being taken advantage of. He was upset that the religious leaders there were taking advantage of the widows by extorting from them. And it's probably why, do you know the book of James? James is the Lord's brother. And it's probably why James has such a hard time with the rich. And why he always seems to be saying about be careful of riches, and why he wants people who come into the church to be given the best seats, even if they're not the best dressed. He's always about that because he has captured something of Jesus' heart for the vulnerable and the down and outs. And Jewish leaders had for years been taking advantage of ordinary people, advantage of the widows, taking their material possessions and arguing if you don't give your money up to the temple and to us scribes, then you're not really doing God's service. They were making them feel bad about who they were and bad about what they were doing. And they were telling them that under the guise of religion and righteousness, they were tricking them. They were making the widows think that if I don't do this, if I don't give up my property to the scribes, then God can't love me. But the scribes were using it for personal gain. And they were using their standing as religious leaders to spiritually abuse these vulnerable people into giving the last that they had. Even their last two coins is what the story goes on to say. And you know, it's awful that today, sometimes when you switch on the TV to certain channels, this is what you see. You see this very thing happening again. You hear phrases like, if you want to be blessed by God, then you give the last that you have. If you want God to love you and you want to prosper in your life, then give everything you have. And do you know the really awful thing is? There are women and there are widows and there are men, lonely men, who are sitting in the house and they're thinking, do you know, I have to give what I have here because this person's telling me. Do you know, it's really awful when that's the way things are happening in the church. Really, really awful and really, really sad. But it's happening today. It does my head in. to use a Belfast phrase. And it's one of the reasons why Jesus was so angry with the religious leaders when he got to Jerusalem. Because their role was to demonstrate the heart of God for ordinary people. That was their job as scribes, as learned individuals who knew the Old Testament, who knew the heart of God, knew the character of God. But yet when he comes on the scene, they're manipulating the very people that they're meant to serve. And that's why Jesus is so angry. That's why he tosses over the tables. That's why he says to his disciples, beware of those type of people, because that's what they're doing, and that's not what you should be doing. And Jesus' heart is for the vulnerable. His heart is for those people who can't look after themselves. His heart is for the poor. His heart is for the very people that these scribes are spiritually abusing. And this lady is a prime example of what Jesus is talking about in his warning about the scribes. She is the very demonstration of what he's just been talking about, who devour widows' houses. And you have a widow coming into the temple and she's given her last two coins. Some translations actually have it the very last that she had to live on. That's what the term used. But let's put it into a bit of a structure. The first thing is this. Jesus saw the hypocrisy of the scribes in the temple. He saw the hypocrisy. And what I mean by that? Well, Jesus is probably the only one that sees past their mask wearing. In that culture, people would have been looking at the scribes and the Pharisees and the religious leaders, and they would have been saying, they are great. They are close to God. They have it all made. But actually, Jesus sees through that. He sees right through that. He sees that at the heart of what they're doing is a desire for power and money and wealth and status. He sees that they're abusing the ordinary people. He sees everything. And in the story about the widow, that he goes on to show, he sees the people coming into the temple who look as if they're giving loads of money into the offering, but actually they're not. They're only giving because they have an excess. They're throwing in what they have left over. And he knows the difference. He can see clearly what's actually going on. They look as if they're giving lots, but actually they're not really. And there's an interesting thing about this. In the temple of that day, the offering plate wouldn't have been a plate, it would have been like an upside down trumpet. So it would have had a small mouth at the top and then at the bottom if it had spread out. And there would have been 13 of them in the temple. So why I'm saying that is this, because Jesus in Matthew 6 uses this phrase. He says, so when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets. See, what was happening was the rich people were going into the temple and they were literally taking coins and throwing it into the trumpet that was there, so it would have made a noise. And people would have looked and they would have seen and they would have went, oh, they've given loads, because that made a big noise. That was what the rich people were doing. But Jesus sees through that. He sees that the woman who's given the two coins is actually given more in comparison to the rest of them, because she's giving of something that she doesn't really have, and they're just giving of their excess. And Jesus would have known the 13 trumpets that were there for the offering. They were designated for different types of people and different offerings for different things. So some would have been designated for, these are for poor people. You give into that because that'll be a smaller amount. Or other ones would have been designated for different things, like sin offerings, guilt offerings, free will offerings, like a tithe, all those type of things. So Jesus would have seen what ones the rich people were going to and also what one the widow was going to. But Jesus sees through it all. He sees through the hypocrisy of the scribes, and he also sees through the hypocrisy of the rich people who are going in and throwing into the trumpet this amount that looks large, but actually, behind it all, it's actually only the excess of what they have left over. See, the scribes and the Pharisees were using the building of the temple for the reason for exacting so much money from the ordinary people. So they were saying that the temple is God's house. He lives here. This is where he dwells. We have to have so much money coming in. And what they were doing was get the ordinary people to pay everything. They were exacting so much money from the ordinary people. And it was used for a place to meet with God. But by the time Jesus came on the scene, it was their God. The temple had become so important to them that they were causing even widows to give the last that they had to keep it going. They had lost all sense of perspective. The temple was only where they were to meet with God, but it became their God in itself. But Jesus sees all of this. The Jews were so caught up in having this building for worship that they forgot about the things that truly matter to God. They forgot about having your heart right before God. And because their focus was on maintaining this temple, they established man-made doctrines to keep it running, to ensure that the building would always be there. That was their main focus. That was their heart. Even if it meant taking advantage of the most vulnerable people in the culture. However, Jesus' focus was on weightier matters than that. It was on a spiritual state of a person and also upon the living conditions of the poor and needy and the vulnerable. That was Jesus' heart. But they had lost this. They had lost sight of that. And you know, I'm glad that Jesus sees hypocrisy. I'm glad about that. Because sometimes we see the hypocrisy of people and we see the damage that people do and we go, does nobody see this? Does nobody see that that's just a front? That's just a facade? Does nobody notice? Does nobody care? But you know, Jesus sees through it all. And that's comforting to know. He will set it right. He will make things right when he returns. I love that. Because we've all suffered at the hands of hypocrites, haven't we? We've all suffered in our churches and in our lives where people have said one thing, but really underneath there was another motive, where we've been taken advantage of and we've been wounded and all of those things. But you know, Jesus has seen it all, and Jesus will make it all right. It's encouraging to know that Jesus sees, but you know, it's challenging too, because we all have a tendency to be hypocritical. All of us, every single one of us. We all have a tendency to put up a mask that portrays something when really underneath it's very different for us. We all want to look good before others. We all want to seem as if we've got it all together and our relationships with God is absolutely perfect. But really underneath, sometimes we're broken and underneath sometimes we've messed up and made mistakes. So it's challenging because we can be hypocritical too. We all want people to look at our sacrificial giving, don't we? We want to think that, oh, I'm doing this for God, and if nobody sees, it doesn't really matter. But actually, when nobody does see, sometimes it does matter. Sometimes, deep down, we want to go, does nobody notice what I'm doing? Does nobody see my sacrifice and what I'm doing? Sometimes we can be like that, and we can be hypocritical. But do you know the lovely thing in this? Even though Jesus sees our hearts, he sees what we do, he sees our hypocrisy sometimes, do you know, he loves us. I'm blown away by that, because when I look at myself, when I sit down and I read, or when I sit down and just reflect and look at myself, who am I? Who is Bill Foy? When I'm on my own and when I'm not up here and when I'm not trying to put on a front, when I'm on my own, I know who I am. I know who that person is. And do you know, the incredible thing is God loves me for who I am. That blows me away. When we see ourselves for who we really are, we can't help but wonder and be amazed at the grace of God, because he is so full of love. How deep the Father's love, as we were singing about earlier. Because he sees everything. He sees underneath the surface, and yet he loves us just the same. And it's no wonder that Paul in Ephesians, when he's praying for the church, he says, may you have power, together with all the Lord's people, be able to grasp how wide and how long and how high and how deep is the love of Christ. It's no wonder that prayer just spills from his lips, because the love of God for us in Christ is, you can't measure it. So high, you can't get over it. That'd make a good song. So low, you can't get under it. Do you know, it's just incredible, because he sees right through everything, but yet he loves us. The second thing is this, he sees the woman and her offering. Jesus not only sees the hypocrites, he sees the widow. And this is great, because widows were one of the most overlooked people in that culture. Do you know, they weren't valued for what they had to say. They weren't valued for what they had to contribute. They weren't valued at all. Nobody wanted to listen to what a widow had to say. But yet Jesus notices her. He notices her, and he notices her contribution. In that culture, her contribution was seen as worthless in so many ways. Well, what she got to offer? Just let her go and let her be. But Jesus notices. And I love that Jesus sees, and I love that he notices her. When Hillary and I were in Ghana, when we were at Bible college, and we stayed with a Ghanaian pastor at the time, it was quite an experience for 6 weeks living with an African pastor. It was great now, but had its challenges. Some funny food and those type of things. But When we were at the church, they had a really unusual way of giving an offering. I don't know if you've ever been in an African church where they have strange ways of giving an offering, where we like to give it kind of secretly. We kind of like to, you know, if you're ever somewhere and someone's giving you a gift for preaching or for singing or for doing something in the church, or Northern Irish people are always slipping it, no, real quiet. They like a wee backhander. Adrian's laughing because that's what they do when you're out and about. We're very different, but in that African culture, they're much more flamboyant in their giving. So during a worship song, they'll dance up to the front and put their offering in the plate. But in this particular church, they did something really strange. When Hillary was singing a solo, the women kind of danced up to the front with some money and like put it on her head and like dropped it. Do you remember that, son? They like dropped it. I don't know what was happening. I wasn't too sure whether they didn't like her singing and they were trying to get her off. I don't know what it was, but they were like setting the money on her head. But we asked the pastor after, what was that about? And that was them just giving an offering. That was how they do it in that culture. And it was a way of saying, you know, we're giving to God and we're thanking God for your gift and those type of things. But it was really, really unusual. People give in different ways in different cultures. And in our story that Jesus tells, you can imagine the rich coming into the temple, you know, proud and look at us. We're coming in here and we're going to give this massive amount into the temple and for God's service and for his temple. And we're look at us. And you can imagine their sort of their pride in that. I can see them as Jesus tells the story in my mind. And then I can imagine this widow who's coming in with 2 copper coins, a minuscule amount. It amounts to nothing. It was so little that it's hard to even give an equivalent today. It was so little. It was all she had to live on. And I kind of picture this widow coming in, and she's probably not full of pride. She's probably a bit embarrassed because she's coming in with people who are giving so much, but she only has 2 copper coins. And she kind of walks into the temple, and no one's really noticing her, and she's a bit embarrassed, and then she puts her 2 copper coins into the offering. But Jesus sees that. Jesus notices that when nobody else has probably even picked up on it. Jesus sees to the heart of why she's given. And he sees that her contribution is valuable. Do you know, sometimes in church and when we're involved in a Christian community, sometimes we look at other people and what they contribute to the body of Christ. And we look at them and we think, do you know, they're giving so much to God. They're giving so much into the community here. They're doing this, they're doing that. They have so much spiritual gift. And what they're contributing is so, so valuable. Do you know there's that person going on a mission trip? They give standing orders all the time. They give that much into the offering and all of that. And we can look and we can kind of think, I feel a bit embarrassed by what I have to offer. But you know, we have to know that what we give is never overlooked by God. We have to know that what we contribute to him is never overlooked. No matter how insignificant it may seem to us, he sees it. No matter how small that 2 pence seemed to that wee widow, when she put it in, Jesus noticed because she was contributing to him out of a heart of even gratitude. We have to know that because sometimes we can feel a bit weak about what we have to offer. But Jesus never overlooks our offering. He always sees it. Always sees it. So please do what you're doing for him. Think about what he sees, not about how it compares to what somebody else has given, not of how small it looks in comparison to their great gifting or whatever, or what they're giving, but just see it in response to him on a personal level. It's really important that you don't miss that. He sees and he values her offering. And Jesus always sees. He never overlooks the marginalized or the vulnerable. Never, ever. In fact, his heart is for them. And it's no wonder that James points this out too in his letter to the church about the vulnerable and about the poor and all of those things, because he's caught Jesus' heart on this. He knows Jesus' heart on these matters. So if you feel you've gone unnoticed, even in church, just let me say, Jesus has seen your gift. Jesus has seen your offering, and Jesus does see, and he will never overlook what you have to offer. He will never overlook it. And thirdly, Jesus values her offering. He says she has put in everything that she had because it was all she had to live on. He values it more than the wealthy contributions made by those scribes, because hers has come from a pure heart. It hasn't come from, I want to be seen by these people. It's actually just something real that comes from inside. It's something sacrificial. And I don't think that this passage is particularly about giving. I don't think it is. I think it's a connection of what the scribes were doing to the widows in this culture. I know it's been preached that way before, that you should give everything that you have and you shouldn't be like the Pharisee or the scribes who just threw in from their excess. I don't think that's particularly what it's about. This woman is an example of what's going on in that culture, where this poor widow feels that she has to give the very last that she has to live on to the temple, even though she may not actually survive. Do you know, if she's given the last two coins that she has, what she has to live on, she might not even make it through this month. Do you know, because that's what the passage is saying here. She's given the very last that she has. So I don't think it's particularly about giving in this instance. But there is a principle here as well. There was a minister who was a missionary in the early 1900s called John G. Lake. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of him. But he's written some incredible books and a real great man of faith and blessing and really stepping out for God. And he's seen some incredible miracles in his day. But you know, there was a real tragedy in the life of John G. Lake, because what John G. Lake thought was him giving an offering to God, he was actually giving the last that he had. Let me explain what I mean by that. His wife actually died at their home of malnutrition while he was out doing missionary work. He had thought in his mind that I have to give until I can't give no more. And when he came home from some of his missionary endeavors, he found his wife had died of malnutrition because she had no food in the house. She had nothing to live on because she was giving it to the people who were coming to the house. Now, why do I tell you that story? I tell you that story because Jesus' heart is for people. Jesus' heart is for us, and he does call us to give to him, and he does call us to serve, but he doesn't call us to kill ourselves in the name of Christian service. He doesn't want us to break down and burn out and give the very last that we have so that we can say, oh, I've given the very last that I have. That is not his heart. That is not his heart. Some people in the past, and books that I've read, I've seen that. I've seen that the attitude has been, I got to give the very last that I have until I can't give no more. But that's not actually what he calls us to do. He calls us to live and to set an example, but also to be sensible, to use our minds, to use our thoughts. This widow was thought that she had to give the very last that she had, even though it meant that she had nothing to live on. Because that's what she had been taught in that culture by the scribes. That's what she had been taught about God and what he was like. But he wasn't like that at all. It's sad that this woman believed that. And it's sad that she thought that that's what God wanted from her, even though she had nothing left. But even though this woman felt, and even though this woman had been wronged and maybe had been guilted into doing what she did, Jesus still valued her offering. Although I would not say to you, give the very last that you have, that's what you have to do. I wouldn't say that. And I wouldn't say that you're not following God wholeheartedly if you don't sell all you have and give it to the poor. I wouldn't say that either. But there is a principle here. There is a lesson that we can learn about giving from a place that actually means something to us. Giving from a place of a pure heart. Instead of just saying, oh, I'll just give what I have left over. If I have some left at the end of the month, I'll just throw it into the offering. If I have some left at the end of the month, then maybe I'll do a standing order for that missionary, or I'll give that to the poor if I have something left over. But you know, we shouldn't be like that in our giving to God. Do you know, our giving to God is not a duty, it's a privilege. It's not a duty. It's not something that we're going to manipulate people into doing. Do you know, God doesn't need our money. God doesn't need anything from us. He exists on his own because he is God, eternal. But yet we get to play a part in establishing his kingdom on earth with our money, with our time, with our efforts, of all of those things. So let me just say, give to God your best. In everything that we do, that's what we're trying to do. We're giving to God our best. And this is what this wee lady did. She gave to God even though it cost her. She gave to God because she knew it was the right thing to do. And we got to be like that as we give and as we serve together in God's kingdom, not just what we have left over and not to be seen by others. That's the principle. We need to ask ourselves about that even. What is our heart? What is our heart behind doing things and why we do them? Why we give? Why we serve? What is our heart underneath all of those things? What is reflected? Are we looking for a pat on the back? Are we looking for someone to notice? Are we doing it for him? Because he's done everything for us. We need to challenge our hearts with that. And also, particularly in church life, what we give, we can often feel like it's been overlooked. We can often feel like people have taken it for granted. We can feel like they'd never notice what I had to give. But it's not about what people see. It's about what he sees. It's about what God sees. Because what we do, how we serve, how we live, how we give, it's just for him. Amen? It's for him. It's so that he sees. It's to be pleasurable to him. It's not so we can get a pat on the back. We need to remember that. So how do we apply some of this stuff to our life? Well, don't let your ritual become your God. Don't let your ritual, your way of connecting with God, become your God. And that's challenging, but that's the truth. We can cause our ritual to become our God. Don't pretend. You know, we can all put on a mask, and we can all look smiley, happy people who's got everything together. We can do that. We can spend the rest of our lives doing that in church. But you know, God isn't interested in that. He actually wants people to be real, confessing our faults one to another so that we may be healed. We need to be open and honest with one another as we live in Christian community together. I'm tired. People are tired of wearing masks. Are you tired of wearing masks? I am. I'm tired of coming into church and pretending like everything's okay. Do you know, we could be of such help to one another if we just let down the guards. If we just said to one another, do you know, I am struggling with this. Can you pray with me? Do you know, God would then have the freedom and the opportunity to move in the way that he wants to. Instead of us wearing masks, going, oh, I've got it all together. Like as Hillary made the announcement this morning, we're all fine. Everybody's fine, aren't we? We're all fine. But really underneath, there's stuff going on in our hearts that God wants to minister through one another, to one another. And we need to not pretend. Be more concerned about what Jesus thinks than what other people think. Be more concerned about what Jesus thinks than what other people think. Because what will happen, you will make a rod for your own back in pretending that you're this person up here when really you're not. And then things will come crashing down. So be more concerned about what Jesus thinks, because it's all he thinks. What he thinks about us is all that matters. And for us, we need to look after the vulnerable. We need to look after the vulnerable. We're blessed. We're materially blessed. We live in a nice part of the world where we have our subscriptions to Sky and we have our cars with car payments. That means that we have a job to do to look after people who don't have it so good. Did you know that that's part of your responsibility? Actually, to sow into mission fields where kids don't actually have anything. Because when we see Jesus, when he comes back and he returns and he says, what did you do to the least of these? What did you do about the people that actually needed stuff all around you? What did you do to that neighbor who lives on their own, who has no company? Did you go and visit them? Did you spend time with them? Because he will be concerned about that. He is concerned about that. He's not so much concerned about the facade that we put up or the rituals that we have. He's concerned about people. And we need to be concerned about people too. Let's look after the vulnerable, even the vulnerable in our own congregation. Even the people who are lonely, who are broken, who are hurting, let's come round one another and look after the vulnerable. Understand that God's heart is for people rather than systems. And give your best. Give your best for him.